from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, Bates-Town? Hey! How we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, Brendan behind the glass. It is The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Hope you guys are doing better than the Houston Astros are, who had their tail between their legs. They flew back from the Bay Area yesterday to Houston. Hope the Hive is doing better than the Houston Astros after they were swept against the Oakland Athletics. I thought for sure they were going to win that game yesterday. Win that game, you come back home. Yeah, you lost the series against Oakland, but you took 4 of 6 of the road trip. You continue your streak of winning road trips. Nope, they literally got swept by the Oakland Athletics.
You know, we talked about this yesterday, and I think that we both were speaking from the case of hypotheticals, not expecting it to happen. And then as I'm driving home and I hear the back-to-back home runs, I'm like, oh, God, this could actually happen. Because the lineup still, I was like, well, Dusty's still dustying. And I'm thinking to myself, man, they got their work cut out for them. And then they had chances. But every time they had a chance, it seemed like something else was happening to where they were getting less of a chance, or the opportunity was actually being taken away from them in some regard. And I thought, man, we're going to have something to talk about tomorrow. Because as I said, more from a fan perspective than anything else, I believe that if you got swept by the A's, there are going to be people that, I'm not going to say they're going to press the panic button, but they're going to be worried again. They're going to be concerned. They're going to look at where they were when they went to Seattle and beat the Mariners and realize all the ground that they gained by sweeping them in Seattle has now been erased because Seattle's been winning against the Rangers. And now Seattle comes into Houston and you're exactly where you were a week ago. You're 10 games up against a team that's in second place, that's got their home run hitting, home run derbying J-Rod back in the lineup, and he's hitting home runs again, to where you're going, okay, you now have to pay a lot. This series this weekend got a lot more important than it would have been had you handled your business in Oakland.
Yeah, I think that the fact that now all of a sudden the Astros return home, and the Seattle sweeping the Rangers too, like all of a sudden throws a wrinkle into this too. And I know you still have a comfortable lead in the division. You still lead by 10 games. The Mariners are coming in town for 4, right? You play a 4-game series beginning tonight. Their superstar Julio Rodriguez is back. He's hitting some big. He had a big home run. I think it was yesterday's game.
Two yesterday.
He had one late in the game. It actually might have been 2 days ago. It was against John Gray. He had a 3-run homer down a run like in the 7th. So they're hot. They're hot again. Like they had this temporary hiatus where they were not red hot because the Astros came into town. But then they swept the Rangers. They recovered, responded very nicely, which the Astros will be trying to do today. But as you look at that series, is that the least important sweep ever for the Houston Astros?
I think it might be. I think it really might be. I think that you look back to a year or so, I think it was a year ago, when they couldn't beat teams that were 500 or below. And the Tigers swept you. And the Orioles swept you. And you're like, okay, well, but you know what? Against the good teams, we're damn good. And so you just kind of moved past it and said, okay, let's just press forward and move on. But the problem now that you have is that you're going to press forward and move on against the team that is directly behind you. They're red hot. You're not. And so unlike those series against Detroit and Baltimore a year ago, it's the most unimportant sweep from the standpoint of it doesn't hurt you per se, but it puts you in a predicament for the weekend, like I said, to where you have to be a little bit more hyper-focused and dialed in now because like I said, you know, the team that's in your rearview mirror is a lot closer than it could have been if you took care of your business in the Bay Area.
Yeah, I think it is. The sweep itself, like losing 3 games to Oakland, it's frustrating as a fan. It's you don't like seeing your team being swept against one of the worst teams in baseball. But it also doesn't really change your opinion of who the Houston Astros are. The fact they got swept against the A's, you still think that they're World Series contenders. What happens between now and August 2nd, something that's going to be very entertaining, and you know, depending on how you feel about it, you might think something needs to get done, or you might not. Your feelings of the Astros are still very much the same. But as you said, like losing those 3 games all of a sudden has turned this Seattle 4-game series again into something that you're looking at a little bit closer, which could be a good thing for the Astros. When the Astros play high leverage games, they seem to play a lot better than when they're playing low leverage games. But like it erases the sweep that you had against Seattle, mm-hmm. because you went into that series with a 10-game lead. you now entered this series tonight against the Mariners with a 10-game lead. So it's like a net wash. Like, yeah, you have scoreboard on Seattle. Yeah, you kind of maybe get in their heads a little bit. Oh, this team just embarrassed us. They came into our house and punked us for three straight games. But Seattle's probably feeling okay with the fact that, oh, they punked us. We got swept in Seattle.
Here comes their secondary World Series.
It's their second win. It's their secondary right? World Series. These are the road games of their World Series.
Yep.
Like, they lost all three. We get that. But now they went out and swept the Rangers. You get swept by the A's. Suddenly the Mariners come into town with a 10-game yeah. series. It's like that sweep's completely vanished and gone. Like, it never, ever happened. And the Mariners are in a position where, like, suddenly I look at the four-game series tonight, because you got swept by Oakland, where there's more at stake here. It's much more important. You lose three of four. It's an eight-game lead. Heavens forbid you get swept, and now it's a six-game lead. It puts importance back into this series whenever you left Seattle that you didn't think there was going to be.
Yeah, no, I think that, Jeremy, as they kept saying it was their World Series in Seattle, but World Series is seven games. You're up 3-0, but suddenly they got their best player back. And it's like, in the middle of a World Series where you are facing elimination, all of a sudden you get your superhero back, and now there's hope. And now they got four straight games in Houston where they feel like if they do to the Astros what the Astros did to them, they are in a fantastic position to not only resurrect their playoff hopes, but get right back in the middle of this thing like they were a week ago. And so you have to be concerned. And the other thing that I mentioned yesterday that I think is going to be a big factor, and it also is related to what happened last night later with the Yankees trading for Benintendi, is that on top of the fan base being a little concerned now and knowing how important this series is, they also know that the Yankees went out and made a move.
Yeah.
They knocked down the first domino. And so now they got conceivably better. You just believe that no matter what they do, getting Benintendi and putting him in the lineup in place of either Hicks and or Gallo and anybody else makes them a little better. So now you're saying, okay, now we took a half step back because we got swept and now we let the Mariners think they still got a chance. But on top of that, the team we're really chasing got better. So now it's twofold. What are you going to do with the deadline? What are they going to do? We need help. Now it's suddenly, instead of coasting, saying, we could live with this team just the way it is and it's going to be fine. There's going to be a good section of this fan base that's going to say, no, 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 no. We need to do something now. We need to add to this team. We need to make it better because right now they got me a little concerned. And then because of this being swept, that's got them concerned. I think the fan base is going to get a little edgy going into this series.
Yeah, I think that the Astros need to change the tone, right? Change the momentum, because all of a sudden you're looking at a spot where, okay, Seattle takes game one. Okay, you know, still a 9-game lead, not that big a deal. Okay, Seattle takes game two. Oh, 8-game lead. Okay, Seattle, Julio Rodriguez, we see what you're doing there a little bit. Oh, they take game three? It's
and
seven
who you're
games?
Beating, too, now. Remember that, too, because yeah. You're going to face their best pitching.
Yeah, you're going to – yeah. Gilbert, I think, goes tonight against Urquidy. Verlander will be on the mound
But I'm
Friday
saying from the Astros' perspective, if they start stacking wins and start beating
Astros
Verlander and Fromber and stuff like that, now you're going to see them really start feeling good.
Yeah, because you could throw that caveat into the Oakland series. Oh, yeah, you know, we lost three, but we didn't have Verlander or Fromber on the bump.
Right.
Oh, okay. Well, they are going to be on the bump against Seattle. And look, I still think that the Astros, like, if we're predicting what happens in this four-game series, I think that they're going to turn the switch on. They're going to turn the light on because it seems like that's what they do. You know, they'll play down to the level of competition, but then they'll step up to the level of competition. And we've seen that on display in the first, what is it, eight games out of the All-Star break. We saw it in the Yankee doubleheader. We saw it in the three-game sweep against Seattle. And we certainly saw it in the three-game sweep in which the Oakland A's beat up on the Houston Astros. The A's, for some reason, are the Houston Astros' daddies. Like, it just, for whatever reason, the Oakland A's have the Astros' number this year. And it seems like there's always a team in baseball who's one of the worst that has another team's number. Like, the Orioles had the Yankees' number a bit last year. You brought up the Yankees' point. Like, Benintendi, he's a good player. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say he's not. He's a good player, contact hitter. He hits for very good average, top 10 in the league. I think he's top 5 in the league. He gets on base quite a bit. It's an upgrade for what they have. It's an upgrade over Aaron Hicks. It's an upgrade over Joey Gallo. He fits a need for them as well in the outfield. They needed an outfielder. I don't think the Yankees are done either. So, like, we're having this conversation with, like, an AL West perspective. Yes, you're still comfortably in front of the division by 10 games. But you do have Seattle, who's the runner-up right now, coming into town for four. If you have that conversation about the top spot in the American League, and I think that you want the top spot a little bit more than I want the top spot, I would like it, but I'm not going to beat up, you know, my players and drag them through the mud and play them every day with the idea of let me chase the Yankees. But in terms of, like, contenders in the American League, the Astros are there. But the Yankees are trying to do whatever they can to increase their odds to win a World Series. They did that yesterday with Andrew Benintendi. I expect them to probably trade for a starting pitcher and probably more. The Houston Astros have pretty good odds to win the World Series. Mm-hmm. I think they can win the World Series without a move. But they can certainly increase their odds by making some trades. And if you're trying to keep up with the Joneses, and the Joneses in this case being the New York Yankees, I expect the Houston Astros to be very active between now and August 2nd.
I think the only good thing, Jeremy, as we look at what happened last night, was the Yankees started the process by going after someone that the Astros really didn't need, mm-hmm. and they gave up some of their prospects. So now you can check that off the board. You know they still need relief pitching. You know, after I was watching that Mets-Yankees game last night, and their bullpen has a ton of question marks because King is basically lost for the season, and he had a broken bone in his elbow. They're looking at ways to try and figure out what they're going to do across the board because even their one-time closer is now a question mark. So you look at all these things and you say, they're still going to be active. You're right. They're going to look at Castillo. They're going to go after another big fish that's out there. But they're starting to at least whittle down their prospects. So you're looking at it going, normally it takes that first domino to fall, and now all the teams are going to be on hyper alert as maybe it's time to start really, you know, attacking the market.
Yep.
And so you believe that this is what James Click wanted. Now go out and start doing a couple of things to go make the moves you need to make your team better before it's too late and you lose out on guys that you really want.
That's the thing, too, like the Benintendi trade, it does make the Yankees better. But to your point, it probably was not somebody that you were going to seek.
Right.
And it potentially like takes them out of the Juan Soto market, too. Which if you're looking in 2022, okay, like they still have the pieces to go get Juan Soto, but how aggressive will they be now that they have a much better bat in the outfield than what they had 2 days ago? 713-780-ESPN. Astros losing to the A's. Demoralizing, or is it the least important sweep the Astros have ever had? Text line is down today, but you can call in 713-780-ESPN. Our HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're also on Twitch, as we always are. Twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter, and I'm at Jeremy Branham. One thing watching that game yesterday, Blankers, mm-hmm. should Dusty Baker be managing a baseball team in 2022? Mm. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN925.
ESPN975. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN975 and 925. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, I don't think that the Astros lost yesterday because of Dusty Baker. I don't think the Astros have lost 35 of their 35 games this year, any one of those on Dusty Baker.
Ooh.
But Blankers, maybe. You can make the case.
One or two, maybe.
Maybe. Look, I'm not trying to say that Dusty Baker's the reason that they lose games, right?
Right.
Like, I got into a little bit of a Twitter spat yesterday with somebody. It's like,
you?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. He's
Stop.
Like, yo, you can't blame Dusty Baker because Yuli's met father time and Bregman's not living up to the expectations of his contracts. And I was like, no, I can't. Like, Dusty Baker's not going to sprinkle success on Houston Astros. But you know what you got, and you could slot them maybe in the batting order a very specific way that can increase your chances of winning, even
right.
if you're getting the same level of production from Yuli Gurriel, who's met father time.
You can't manage them.
Yesterday.
You can't set a lineup to win and guarantee a win. But you can set a lineup that gives you a better chance to lose, as we kind of highlighted even yesterday with the way they don't protect Yordan in the cleanup. But just how randomly he goes in terms of who he puts at the top of the lineup. It's just, it's not conducive to managing winning baseball. Let's just be honest.
Yeah. I mean, you're preaching to the choir.
Here. I know.
And like I've gotten to the point where like I'm sick of like nitpicking batting orders because I feel defeated. Like if I'm being honest with you, like, okay, well, like this order stinks. I said yesterday that, you know, I'm done complaining about the batting order with one exception. And that one exception is get protection for Yordan Alvarez the absolute best way that you can. And you could push back and say, well, the Astros don't really have that. I would say the best option's Kyle Tucker, right? Mm-hmm. And the Astros offense kind of took off when Dusty Baker, for about a couple of weeks, eliminated the idea that he must go lefty-righty, lefty-righty, lefty-righty. Like, this is 1970s Major League Baseball in the National League.
Is it not fair to say, Jeremy, that a good line, a good baseball team can outperform a bad manager?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's exactly...
Look at the AL All-Star game.
That's what we see. We see a guy that over-tinkers, over-rests, and doesn't get where to set a lineup and just decides, if my two-hitter is going to be out of the lineup, I just, whoever's replacing him should just go into the two spot in the two hole and be just fine and do the things that we've highlighted. And that's where I think that he's just had such a blessing to have the team that he has, that they can outperform whatever lineup and lineup card he puts out there. And that's just a huge kudos to this baseball team. But it's also to say that if he was on other teams doing this same kind of thing, he could be responsible for losses when he's scattering and putting some of his better hitters down in the bottom of the lineup or not capitalizing on how many at-bats the first three or four guys can get.
Yeah, I watched that game yesterday. And, like, people come at us. Like, we had a caller, last week, I think it was, Blinkers, that was like, why do you guys blame Dusty Baker, right? Like, how can you say this? Dusty Baker's got 2,000 wins. Like, I look at Dusty Baker as a dude that's playing blackjack that hits on 17. Like, he's hitting on 17. He might get a 4. Congratulations, you won. That's an outstanding win for you. Cash in those chips, baby. But it's stupid. It's idiotic. He's the dude that stays on 9. He's the dude that hits when the dealer's facing a bus card. Like, does it work sometimes? Does it work more times than it hasn't in Dusty Baker's career? Yes. And most of that has been prior to this, you know, this decade of baseball and Major League Baseball. But just because you come out successful doesn't mean it's always the right decision, hitting on 17 in blackjack. So, like, I even appreciate lineup feng shui, right? Like, I appreciate, okay, I want a lefty batting second in case there's a runner at first. Like, I will appreciate that sort of thing. But I'm not prioritizing that over Aledmys Diaz being the protection in a lineup. Or if you want to say Alex Bregman being the protection in a lineup behind Yordan Alvarez ahead of Kyle Tucker.
But Jeremy, I'm going to also go in a different direction with this because I see Todd saying, such a blessing. We haven't even had a healthy roster all year. But you know what? That's even more why it's even more important and it's even more heightened that you showed that you still have a capable roster enough to win games. But if you were really smart about it, you might have won more games than you've lost with those injuries if you had stacked the top part of your batting order so they got more at-bats in key situations and saw more good pitches so they could get you more results. When you look at the direction I was going to go, the other thing that I've never seen before in my life, and I've seen the opposite almost my entire life, even if I had a scheduled day off for one of my guys, if he goes 3 for 4 the night before, baseball's such a streaky, superstitious game. Before he even could get to my office and tell me I want to go tomorrow, Skip, I'm keeping him in the lineup. I'm going to keep, even if it's one more game or whenever, you know, whatever the case may be, I'm not going to sit hot hands. If my guy is hot, unless he is hurt and he says, I need to sit tomorrow, if you're riding a hot streak, you're riding back out there onto the field and you're not sitting down.
And that's the kind of the interesting thing about Dusty is you would think like an old school manager would have that mentality of like, okay, that guy's hot. I'm going to keep him in the lineup and then I'm just going to put off his day off. The day off's going to be in the queue, right? Where if he's hot on a Monday, he's going to be in the lineup on Tuesday. And then if he has an 0 for on Tuesday, well, there's your day off on Wednesday. It is bizarre. And then like the splits games too, like Chaz McCormick, much better against lefties than he is against righties. Aledmys Diaz, much better against righties than he is lefties. Yet Aledmys Diaz will get the starts against lefties and Chaz McCormick gets the start against righties. Makes sense of that. It makes absolutely no sense. And to the people that are like, why do you guys bang on Dusty Baker? Just watch the July 27th game against the Oakland A's. Like, okay, you have a rested bullpen. You're going Phil Maton in a critical spot, or you're trying to get an extra inning out of Seth Martinez. Okay, whatever. You're managing for 162 instead of the 1, even though it means that you're getting swept in Oakland against one of the worst teams in baseball. You'd think there'd be some urgency there. There isn't. Okay, fine. You have a 10-game division lead. You're going to run away with the division. You're going to make the playoffs. Okay, I'll understand that. Maybe not agree, but understand. You're in the 8th inning yesterday, and it was a 2-run game in the 8th inning. Where it's like, okay, you have Corey Lee leading off the inning. You got some good dudes on the bench. Alex Bregman's grabbing a bat. Jeremy Pena's over there in the dugout. No, Corey Lee, you go ahead, lead off this inning for us. No big deal. We're just going to fly back to Houston without any effort of trying to win this game to salvage the game in the series. Okay, fine. You're looking long-term. You're managing for the 162. I understand, maybe not agree, but I understand. But whenever you have a dude in the cleanup spot that is a utility player, a super... Look, and I like Aledmys Diaz. I think you like Aledmys Diaz, too. Mm-hmm. He is a very good super utility player. He's been swinging a very good bat. But when you have Yordan Alvarez, the very best hitter in baseball, that's being protected by Aledmys Diaz, what's the opposing manager going to do? Every time that Yordan is in the batter's box in a significant at-bat, he's going to walk Yordan Alvarez. The Astros, yesterday, they had Yordan Alvarez coming to the plate in the 8th inning. Runner at second base, 2 outs. Why in the world would you walk Yordan Alvarez to bring up the potential winning run or the go-ahead run? Because it's Aledmys Diaz. Yep. And you might say, well, they would have done the same thing if it was Alex Bregman. Okay, then bat Kyle Tucker there. Okay, go make a trade. You can do whatever you want with this team, Dusty and James Click. And this is what we talked about yesterday. Like, this isn't a new thing because Diaz is hitting in the four hole. We talked about this yesterday, 3 hours before the game.
We set the table.
Before the first pitch. Yordan Alvarez needs protection in this lineup. The best case that you have right now is Kyle Tucker. That's the best scenario for it. Probably the best realistic chance for it long term is you trade for a bat that can protect him as well. Where it's Tucker, the traded bat, or the traded bat Tucker, I don't care.
Switch hitter.
But if switch hitter named Joshua Bell. But if you're not going to do that, like if you're not going to protect Yordan Alvarez, if you're going to continue to roll Bregman out there, if you're going to continue to roll Ledmus Diaz out there, just move him up in the lineup. If you refuse to protect Yordan Alvarez, move him up, make him a table setter instead of the dude clearing the table.
Remember in the Yankee series when everybody said what you should do with Aaron Judge? It's coming. It's happening. And so you've got to plan accordingly as a manager that if you don't want to pitch to Yordan Alvarez or you feel it's coming, get someone capable behind him of hitting like Kyle Tucker. It makes no sense to me.
But even, like, to me, there's other ways to do it. Like, going out to make a trade requires a trade, so I understand. Well, we don't have that bat. Okay, I get that. I understand that. You don't have that bat. Hopefully you do have that bat by August 2nd. I don't even care the days off. I know that you get pretty hot about the days off, and look, I get it. But okay, like, you need to get Alex Bregman a day off. Fine. You need to give Jeremy Peña a day off. Fine. You need to give, like, Jose Altuve needs a day off. Like, fine, whatever.
But you know what? Let me say something about that real quick. Day off is one thing. Like, you're sitting for most of the game.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean if I need a big at-bat late in the game, you shouldn't be unavailable. I hate hearing that, too. Well, Dusty likes it when they get the full day. Screw the full day. If half a day means you get another win, you let that guy get up there and grab a bat.
To play devil's advocate here, not that I disagree, Dusty Baker rather lose a 4-2 game to the Oakland A's on July 27th for a sweep on getaway day than to have Alex Bregman get one at-bat. Look, I'm not saying I agree. I'm not saying I agree, but am I wrong? Like, Dusty Baker's willing to do that. We saw it firsthand yesterday.
If I got choices on the bench, but I'm looking at a Corey Lee or I'm looking at, you know, Dubon or somebody like that because I'm not allowed to go to a guy on the active roster that's getting a day off like Altuve or Bregman or others, that is absolutely ludicrous to me. Like, I need a guy that's going to put back to baseball one time that could possibly win me a game that looked like it was going to be lost. But you want me to take a guy that's got a far less chance of doing anything successful? Screw that. Period.
Yeah. Look, I understand that. But let's just give Dusty Baker a bone here and give him the benefit of the doubt. You have to rest those guys for the sake of the conversation here. Okay, you know which nine are playing. You know that yesterday Peña's off, Bregman's off, blah, 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 blah. You have your specific nine. Okay, but how about you optimize that nine? How about you get a dude that's going to get Yordan Alvarez the best protection? Like, people said that, well, Ledmus Diaz has been hot. He's been hot for 17 games. How hot do you think Mark Kotze thought of Ledmus Diaz was as soon as Yordan Alvarez even sniffed the batter's box, four pitches, you head down to first base, I'd rather face a Ledmus Diaz as the go-ahead run than Yordan Alvarez as the tying run. And I realized that stuff was going on with Bregman, too. So, yeah, put Bregman in that conversation. The best option you have right now to protect Yordan Alvarez until you make a trade, if that happens, is Kyle Tucker. It is criminal that Kyle Tucker is not the one protecting Yordan Alvarez. And Dusty would tell you it's because, well, I don't want two lefties back-to-back.
Stop.
That's 1970 baseball.
Yep. I'm tired of hearing all that, too. Like, you go with what you know, and especially from an analytical-based organization, you know that the best hitters in your lineup are named Alvarez and Tucker. And so Tucker should be guarding Alvarez in that lineup every single time that they can and getting you prepped for a playoff run in which they should be there every single night, period. That is it. And if not, then you're going to see more times coming up like yesterday, like we've seen when it looks at what it looks like from a different team's perspective when they do it to Aaron Judge or when you want them to do it to Aaron Judge. That's what teams are going to do to you. And if there is not a good cover behind him, you're going to see it even more frequently because it's going to be successful, and that is not something you want if you're an Astros fan.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Lance McCullers made his second rehab start yesterday. Is he becoming a real boy? Is it starting to be real with Lance McCullers? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham. on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Siri Ginefield tweeting at us, the only issue I have with yesterday, there should be more than one. Why start Lee in two games, especially yesterday? Dude is personally responsible for two runs. I get that, and I think that's why the Astros are going to trade for a catcher of some sort between now and August 2nd. I'm not sure it's going to be Wilson Contreras, but I don't think Corey Lee is going to be on this Major League Baseball team after August 2nd. I think that they want him to get full-time reps behind the dish in Sugar Land, full-time at bats in Sugar Land, and they just don't really trust Corey Lee yet handling a pitching staff and handling pitches.
Well, and also throwing. Yesterday, that throw to second base tells you, look, he just needs more seasoning. It's not to say that he's a bad player or he's not going to be what you want him to be. It just means that he needs more work.
He's
and
not
for
ready.
A team that's this good, he's not the guy that you need to be your second-string catcher.
And Siri Ginefield will probably push back and say, well, then why is Lee starting two games? Maldonado's getting beat up, man. Maldonado needs some rest.
Doesn't he lead the American League in starts at catcher?
That sounds right. I'm not 100% sure, but it sounds right.
He's either innings-wise or games-wise, he leads the American League in games started behind the plate. And that is taxing people.
Look, Maldonado's not, a spring chicken, right? Maldonado is not necessarily a young man. So you try to figure out a way to get Maldonado days off whenever you can. And I think that's why the Astros are going to be pretty aggressive at the catcher market, even if it means it's a backup catcher. But it seems like the Astros would be okay upgrading over Martin Maldonado. If they're kicking the tires on Wilson Contreras, that Sean Murphy, the Oakland catcher, came up in the Rosenthal article today.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, he's Gold Glove last year, so he can swing the bat a little bit too, yep. A little bit more than Maldonado can. Anyways, one of the best things that happened for the Astros yesterday was far, far away from Oakland Coliseum and Ricky Henderson Field and the whole Bay Area. It was at Bricktown in Oklahoma City. Lance McCullers making his second start in his rehab assignment. This is actually, remember we set out the schedule? This is a day before we thought he would pitch. We thought he would go today.
They didn't get him the extra day. He's back. Yeah. He's on 4 days.
He went on 4 days rest. Now, he didn't throw a ton of pitches, right? Like, it's not 5 days rest because he threw 110. He's coming off a 40-something a pitch appearance in rehab assignment one. Well, yesterday, second rehab assignment, gave up a couple of runs. But the thing that I'm looking at the most, 52 pitches, had his full arsenal. Some people were freaking out that, he didn't throw any fastballs. Well, his sinker is his fastball. His sinker is 94 miles per hour, so don't freak out about that. You're talking about you wanted to see the breaking balls.
Yes, I did.
As well. 12 curveballs, 5 sliders. Okay. It counted for 33% of his pitches yesterday. Yeah. So it looks like McCullers has his arsenal. Looks like Lance McCullers has his repertoire. And I think, Blankers, that Lance McCullers might have tipped his hand on when we should expect him back with the Houston Astros.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to get another couple of rehab starts in. You know, I would say, I think, to continue to, this is my first time, on a five-day schedule. It's important to, keep kind of building that up and making sure my midweek work, is able to be consistent, on the rotation. So just got to keep, keep building. And, I think I'll be pitching in a Space Cowboy uniform a couple more times probably.
Couple more times.
Jeremy, spot on with what we said.
Mm-hmm.
You give him a couple more starts, and we said, August 15th. August 15th, we would see him again. And we are heading right for that target date. And then from that point on, you've got to see him pitch in an Astros uniform on multiple occasions and see what you really have. And then evaluate it. And then decide, is he worthy of being in your rotation? Is he worthy of being on your playoff roster? He obviously doesn't want to be in your bullpen, but is that something you're going to consider? And a lot is going to also be weighed in by what they do and don't do August 2nd at the trade deadline. But I think overall, he's telling you in his mind and what they're thinking behind the scenes that if they don't have any setbacks and he continues to do what he has been doing, then the logical thing to do over the last 30 or 45 days of the season is to get him out there in a major league uniform on a mound against major league hitters and see exactly what you have. That's great. You know me. I'm not getting excited till I see that, and I see that happen multiple times, and there's no setbacks. But, look, I'm glad that he's progressing.
Do you think
Thank God it didn't take almost a full year.
Do you think it's becoming more real, though? Like the fact that, this is the second time. His fastball velo seems to be fine. His sinker, people like to nitpick that.
He thought it was going to take a while to get that ramp back up to 95 or so. But if he's already at 94, that's great.
Remember he was throwing 91 in the little simulated bullpen.
That was on Odorizzi's clock, and it was slow.
Odorizzi does everything a little bit slow.
Yep.
But starting to feel more real. How can you say it's not? He made his second rehab start, threw 50-something pitches, threw out the breakers, threw out the sinkers there at 94. The velo is about where he was a year ago. So it seems like he has his stuff. Seems like he has his repertoire. Now he's just kind of working on the conditioning. Now, is it becoming – like, it's obviously becoming more real in his rehab. It looks like it's becoming more real, and we get closer and closer to our projected August 15th.
Pitching on flat ground to, you know, limiting the amount of pitches he throws and what he throws and at how fast he throws, to throwing minor league games against live hitting and throwing that to that level, you have to realize he is ramping it up. He is getting closer.
He's becoming a real boy, starting to get there. Now, there's one thing between starting to feel real in the sense of, okay, we might see him August 15th or somewhere in that window, versus, okay, this is Lance McCullers, the ace of your staff in 2021, and a Lance McCullers that you're comfortable using in a playoff rotation. Because for me, the fact that we see his full arsenal, the fact that the fastball's at 94, the breakers he's throwing it, you know, with some tenacity, right? He's throwing it, he's okay with it, he's waking up this morning and his UCL hasn't exploded, right? It's becoming more real for me that this is going to be one of your four playoff starters come October, come playoff time. Are you ready to go that far yet?
You know me, I'm not ready to go any further on Lance McCullers until I get to where I said that we got to get to, and that is facing major league hitting in multiple games, showing you could be effective, and more importantly, showing you're not going to have any medical setbacks, and showing that you have signs of getting back to where you were pre-injury. If you can do those things and you can progress to that level, then I'm willing to take the caution tape that I have put up off, and take the blinders down that I have put up that said I don't see Lance McCullers in my rear view or anywhere close to major league fields, and I don't want to because I'm not going to get excited because I'm not expecting him to come back. This is showing me that I'm getting closer to having to positively face reality that he could be realistically a part of this team. It's a great ad if he is all those things. Yep. But I don't want to get all ramped up and excited for a guy that's going to come crashing down again.
You're tempering the expectations. Yes. What is the old saying?
I'm the voice of reason, though.
If you know the wait at a restaurant is going to be 20 minutes, tell the people it's going to be 30, not 10, right? Because it's setting the expectations. I feel like that's what you're doing with Lance McCullers. Like, if you know that Lance McCullers is going to be himself, don't say that Lance McCullers is going to be himself. Say that he's going to be a shell of himself. That way you can over-exceed what you've sold. Now, like, I still need to see things from Lance McCullers before I'm like, okay, this dude locked down one of your four pitchers, one of your four starters, I should clarify, in the postseason. I just feel confident that he's going to meet those qualifiers. Because we kind of set out those qualifiers of what we need to see for Lance McCullers before, okay, give him a playoff start, because he does have to earn it. You know, 5, 6, 7 starts, maybe a little bit more with the big league team in August and then into September. You have to show that you're a capable pitcher, because this is a very competitive pitching staff right now. You have to show that you're one of your best four that the Astros have. I think he's going to get to that point, and the fact that we see this ramp-up period, the fact he's throwing 50-something pitches, yes, there's still hurdles to climb, a decent amount of hurdles to climb, but I feel a lot more confident saying that Lance McCullers can be one of your four once the playoffs roll around.
Yeah, look, and I think that the one thing that we said when we were talking about this the other day, which is when you start evaluating your starting pitchers, the one thing that has to factor in that isn't always one of your first things that you look at is, do you have an out pitch? Do you have a strikeout pitch that other guys don't have? Odorizzi doesn't have one. But if you look at McCullers with that breaking pitch and you know how devastating it can be, that makes him a more effective and better option as a starting pitcher, especially in the playoffs. And because he has had multiple big-time experiences in the highest setting possible in baseball, in the World Series, in the playoffs, you know, brightest lights, biggest stage type things, like I always say, then you know you've got that guy. You've got another guy that's a plug-and-play guy because he has things that Odorizzi doesn't have. He has things that if you have concerns about some of your young pitchers, you have a guy that trumps them because of the fact that he brings those extra intangibles to the table. That's why, just another reason why, Jake can go kick rock, and if McCullers is healthy, you are in a very luxurious position because now it's easier for you to put Javier in the bullpen where he's more effective for you. And because you can replace him in the starting rotation and you don't lose.
Yeah. Sorry, I was chuckling there because you mentioned Odorizzi and McCullers in the same sentence and it caught me funny.
Well, but I mean, he's one of the seven, right?
One of the, maybe not even seven if you throw Hunter Brown in that mix. Anyways, one of the things that I love in the postseason, and this kind of benefits Lance McCullers from
that
this opinion.
That was a late hit, right? The way you threw that in there?
I see what you did.
Thank you.
I like swing and miss in the playoffs.
Yes.
I like swing and miss in the playoffs. So, like, there's a few Astros that don't have swing and miss, or Odorizzi's one, or Keedy, who I love, is also one of those guys that doesn't have swing and miss. I want swing and miss in the postseason when the stakes are a little bit higher. The hitters are a little better than when you're playing the A's and the Angels and the Rangers during the regular season. Give me swing and miss in the playoffs. Now, I don't want walks, but give me swing and miss in the playoffs, and Lance McCullers brings that to the table.
Perfect example, last night, Mets-Yankee, Scherzer's on the mound. You have first and third, one out. If you've got a guy that doesn't have an out pitch, chances are you're giving up at least one run because contact and or fly ball is going to give you a run. When you've got the kind of stuff that a Max Scherzer has, and I'm not saying everybody has that kind of stuff, but I'm saying, but if you have a pitch comparable that can get guys on their heels and get them on their front foot and swinging and missing, like Scherzer does, like McCullers does, like Verlander does, like Fromber does with his breaking stuff, now you've got the ability, you've got a better chance of getting out of just about any situation. And like you said, when it translates to the playoffs, when every single pitch is critical and every moment in a game can be a game changer, you need to have an out pitch. He has that kind of pitch. He is that kind of guy. We've seen it. We know it. We need it. It would be great to have him back. I just won't get excited about it till I see those major league starts and I see him progressing to that level.
Are you starting to see light at the end of the tunnel for the Lance McCullers Jr. return? And does it feel, is it starting to feel real that he'd be part of this playoff rotation come October? All right, when we return, is it okay for a man, a dude, you're running outside, we live in Texas, it's very hot. Is it all right for you to run without your shirt off? Skiller Beast, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I love these people because they care about their patients, they take care of them, and they get them the results that they're after. It's great because there's so many things in life where you feel like, hey, you know what? I'm at a certain point where I just can't anticipate or expect that I can do those things anymore. Well, you can. You're not trying to win an Olympic gold medal. You're trying to win the day. When you're trying to win the day, you just need energy. You need to be able to get through all the things from your work schedule to your family requirements to the gym maybe, to all the different things you need to do so you're not petering out and taking a nap and then realizing you're going to bed a couple hours early because you just don't have anything left in the tank. People at Apollo Men's Health make sure your tank is full and you're ready to go no matter what the instance. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, they can help. Check them out today. Go to ApolloMH.com and see all the different services they offer and all the different ways they can help. And then when you do that, make your first appointment. Do so because you're going to be absolutely trying to help yourself, and your health is your wealth. You have to invest in yourself just like you do the stock market. But when you make that appointment, you'll find out most major insurance is accepted. There's discounts for military personnel and first responders. But then make the appointment, show up, and realize these people care about you. They want to get you where you want to go. So tell them what you're trying to achieve. Tell them the goals you've set for yourself. Tell them the setbacks you're experiencing. They'll work your way through it all the way, every step of the way. They have everything from hormone therapy to things for your smoothies and everything in between. Mention my name, Joel Blank, free B12 shot or a free body composition analysis on your first visit to set the chart so that you can know where you're going and how you're progressing along the way. They are fantastic people doing great things on a daily basis. Two locations to better serve you near downtown Houston. Check them out today. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
97.5.
I assumed you knew.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Killer Bees, Joe Blank, Jeremy Branham with you. ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Is it okay to run outside without your shirt on if you're a man? I was driving around the other day. I think it was around Memorial Park. And there was a few dudes out there that were running around without their shirt on. Some of them were fit. Some of them not as fit. Mm-hmm. I think a way to say it best, is it okay if you're running around? It's very hot in Houston, obviously. It's almost 100 degrees every single day, right, Pool Bird Marine? Is it all right to do that if you're a dude?
I mean, if you're comfortable in your own skin, and you don't, and especially if you're not fit and you do it, then as long as you're comfortable with you being you, then you can do whatever you want to do. I've always had an issue with it. I've had a hang up with it since I've been little. I mean, I was, you know, I went through the fat stages and the pudgy little kid stage so that I was shamed a lot when growing up with it. So I'll go sleeveless, but you know, if you're ripped up or you're, you know, and you're, or you're comfortable in your own skin and that's how you choose to run, then just go right ahead.
Describing me.
That you're comfortable in your own skin, no matter what you look like.
You know, cut up, all that stuff. I can tell when you look at me, you like me. So I think that's the case.
When I look at you, I like you.
What I can tell, yeah. I can
is
tell.
Is that just because you mean talk, from a conversational standpoint or otherwise?
We don't need to define it. We don't need to define it. All anyways, some people on day one, Donna. She says Memorial Park are full of shirtless men. How do you know, day one, Donna? Just curious. Have you ever seen Running Jesus there? Who's that?
So there's a guy. He's legendary at Memorial Park. And when I lived in Midtown, I used to run Memorial four or five times a week. Running Jesus is a dude that just wears those super small running shorts and has like Trevor Lawrence's hair, and he wears a ball cap and he has kind of a beard, and everybody just started saying that he looked like Running Jesus. And I think he's like a mechanic in River Oaks or something like that, but he is there every day and he probably runs like 12 miles every day around Memorial Park.
If you are that man, 713-780-ESPN.
Yeah, you can't miss him. If you see him, you know exactly who I'm talking about.
My friend Guy wads with no shirts on, by the way. What were you about to say, Brendan?
Well, I wanted to tell you why it's not okay to run outside with no shirt on. Because why are you running outside? It's July. Do you hate yourself?
Well, some people like to run outside more than they like to run on treadmills.
Oh, man. I just bought a treadmill and it's the best purchase I've ever made in my life.
But you don't run on it. It's like, to me, I cannot run on a treadmill.
Running a track. Figure something out, man.
Trucks outside.
Running outside. Well, I meant like at a gym, but like it is miserable.
I completely disagree.
Miserable outside. Yes. Walking outside is miserable.
No, I loved the fact that you knew you were going to sweat, but I loved the fact that, you know, again, and I don't think it's any secret. You go to Memorial Park and you run. There, to Jeremy's point, like how monotonous it is to run on a treadmill. Like I've said over and over again, Lisa's run 12 marathons. Lisa runs on a treadmill and can run for 2 to 3 hours on a treadmill. And the mental discipline that takes is far exceeds anything I could consider. But if I'm running Memorial Park, the eye candy and the scenery that are around, of course, I mean the golf course. But I mean, there's so many different things that keep you looking, you know, as you're running that you kind of don't concentrate on how far you have to go and how long you've been running, and it's a huge help. It was a huge help for me.
Whenever I run, which is like once every 3 or 4 years, it's always outside. I can't do it inside. It's just miserable to do it inside. You got to be outside whenever you're getting a run in. 713-780-ESPN.
It's miserably hot outside.
But you're working out.
There's no TV on to watch. Just no thank you.
I'm always scared of doing the Moises Alou though on a treadmill.
When you see the other fine sights that there are to watch.
How long you been married?
8 years, 7, 8 years.
713-780-3776.
Just because you're married doesn't mean that your radar gets turned off
I was just asking. It was a completely separate question.
I'm just answering.
Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Paul, you're in the high with the Killer Bees. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, so running outside, I'm like 5'7", 160 pounds. Asian. I grew up in Minnesota, so I don't wear a shirt when I run outside unless it's 50 degrees or colder.
Okay.
Because I sweat too much.
So you wear a shirt when it's above that temperature, though, because it can catch your sweat?
No, I just sweat too much, and it just overheats my body.
Okay, so let me get this straight. You're wearing a shirt above 50 degrees or below 50 degrees?
Above 50 degrees is usually my line of where I wear a shirt or not. Below 50 degrees, but 50 degrees or above, I'm never wearing a shirt, not even for races.
So under 50 degrees, aren't you getting a little chilly?
Oh, not in the Midwest.
No,
that's why you see Wisconsin people wearing shorts in Houston when it's like 50 degrees.
So when do you put a shirt back on? At what temperature? Like under 20?
Well, like if it's lower 40s, I would wear a shirt or a tank top.
That's not much of a window there. But lower 40s and 50?
No, you're not following him. He's saying if it is below 50, he wears a shirt.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. So anything above 50. Appreciate the call, Paul. Thank you for calling in and letting us know. Is it okay for a man not to wear a shirt when he's running around? Big C says yes, it is.
Big C also said when he runs with his shirt off, he looks like Baywatch. That's a hell of a bad – that was a bad episode of Baywatch. But I understand that he does have some things flapping around there.
Todd, the show says, in the Woodlands, I've never seen a guy running with a shirt on. Woodlands is kind of a specific set.
Yeah, they're kind of hoity-toity.
He also says 60-year-old guys looking like George the Animal still running out there. Now, does it matter the body type to have a shirt on or not?
Like I said, if you're comfortable in your own skin, then it obviously doesn't because you don't care what people think. But it is sometimes tough, especially when you're like driving through the park Mm-hmm. And it's like you kind of get a quick glance and you go, whoa, hey, wait a minute. But you know what? If you know, whoever wants, it's whatever you do, you be you, man.
Does it bother you if there's a heavy-set guy running without a shirt on? Do you think differently of a heavy-set guy without a shirt on than like a fit guy without a shirt on?
No.
Do you look at them the same?
I think that, like I said, if you're comfortable in your own skin, then you do what you do. I think that to the caller's point, and I don't know why he had to say he was Asian, but I think that overall, just the fact that when you're from different parts of the country, it changes. Like the Midwest, you are so thirsty for warm weather that 50s for you in that climate is like 80s here in Houston. They feel like it is like time to just guns out, runs out. That's basically it.
Total
it's the
Dallas.
Best day of the year, the first time you get 50 after the winter.
No question.
Really?
Yep.
Huh. I can't wait to hit 50 in Houston. Might be January. Total Dallas says, I wear a shirt so the ladies aren't distracted. I do the very same thing. Me and Total Dallas simpatico on that front. I try to make sure that, you know, everybody, you know, they don't want anybody to get distracted. King of Twitch says, he says that body type does matter. You don't want to scare the kids. Like, for me, it's like you shouldn't body shame, right? If you say it's okay for one person, then it should be okay for every other person, right? Shouldn't matter if you're fit. Shouldn't matter if you're unfit. If you're saying that no shirts on a dude when they're running is okay, it's kosher, then it shouldn't matter their body
type. Jeremy, I'm curious how you came to the table with this question. Because I know you said you saw people, but did you go, I don't know about that?
Yeah, I saw a really fat dude running without a shirt on around Memorial Park.
And you didn't love it?
No, I just begged the question. I wonder how Blankers feels. I wonder how Brendan feels. I wonder how the city feels. That's what
It's a no-brainer to me. The only problem is just don't run outside. All right, now. You can do that in the winter.
But if you are running outside,
you can wear whatever you want.
Would you shed the shirt?
See, it's hard for me to answer that question because the reason I bought a treadmill is because I just stopped getting any exercise when it started getting so damn hot outside.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no scenario where I'm running outside right now.
And it's always different, right? But like I said, there's different strokes for different folks. You see these guys that evidently are training for like some mountain climbing excursion and they've got these big ass backpacks and these, you know, and these hiking boots on at the park just to get that extra weight and to prepare them for something. That's fine. I mean, you know, I would think that you should probably make sure that backpack is stacked with water because you're going to be losing a whole bunch sweating like you are with all that equipment on. But to each his own, man. I mean, I think that you're right. I'm not going to take a shot at somebody else because they feel comfortable, you know, throwing the man boobs out there and racing around the park.
See, I think tan comes into play too a little bit though. Like you want a properly distributed tan along your body. And I think some of the people that are running without their shirts on, they have tan in mind, right? Like some of it's comfort, some of it's
temperature. Like when you golf too much and you get that farmer's tan because of the golf shirt.
Yeah. And I think that's probably why you would run sleeveless, right? Like you're working on the upper arm tan. Mm-hmm. The upper arm tan becomes critical. Some people want that tan equally distributed all over their
body. If you wear the golf shirt all week playing golf and you got the farmer's tan, then you show up to play hoops and you got a sleeveless on.
Uh-huh.
And you look like a rugby shirt. It's not a good look.
Poor Marine says, I think it's middle class Marine. He says, do your own thing. There is a dude out at Memorial Park that walks the loop with books stacked on his head while reading a book. Freak show.
Are they like fastened to his head? Or is this a balancing routine?
I think it's a balancing routine. Balancing routine. That's very interesting.
Props to them if they're pulling that off.
Now, it does make sense to like read while you're doing some activity, because now you're trying. Now it's like thoughtless entertainment.
I'm at Memorial Park. The last thing I want to do is read while I'm doing the loop.
It's more like if you're running on a treadmill thing. Like I'm not going to read as I'm doing the loop, even if I'm walking. But like if you're on a treadmill, people will read the books.
If I'm walking on the treadmill, I'll read. If I'm running, no, I'll watch a doc or I'll watch something on TV.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to try and follow the sentences while I'm running. There's too much going on.
The visual of trying to read and run is great,
dude. I would get sick. I'm dead serious. Yeah, I would get motion sickness if I did that. Yeah, that's walking fine. But you're running?
Exactly.
Absolutely not. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Tomorrow's the day. Tomorrow is when the Houston Texans will open up training camp 2022 edition. Those red hot Houston Texans might be the best. They might peak tomorrow. The Houston Texans might. But
our that says a lot.
2022 storylines for the Houston Texans. We're up to number two. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Well, hello!
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more.